This podcast is a part of the Neuhoff Media Podcast Network.
Thanks to a federal grant awarded to the Regional Office of Education, community agencies, including Crossing Healthcare, Decatur Family YMCA, the Salvation Army, and Webster Cantrell Youth Advocacy are partnering for a series called Keeping Our Kids Safe. I'm Brian Byers of NowDecatur.com. In this episode, I had an opportunity to sit down with Nadine Moskovich, founder and CEO of Rise Together, a grassroots nonprofit organization that exists to prevent addiction by encouraging young people to use their voice for change. Featured on the TEDx stage, profiled in Forbes, and recognized as a national survivor advocate from the National Safety Council, Nadine uses her personal story of opioid addiction and recovery to teach other young people and parents how to recognize the signs of substance abuse. We're here with Nadine Moskovich. I want to make sure I say that correctly.
Got it.
You've been featured in TED Talks. You've been recognized by the White House and Forbes magazine. I want to go back to the beginning of your story. You're a Midwest gal. You grew up in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Start as a little girl. Start with where your story begins.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a good place to start. But before I do, I just want to say thank you, of course, for bringing us into this community, having me on here today. I think this conversation is so important. So vital. And for me, this is a dream come true, but it's something that I never imagined happening. Because if I were to tell you and take you back to the beginning of my story, this is something that I never foresaw in my future. I definitely grew up as a small town girl, Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, super rural community. And for me, growing up, I had my mom and my dad, I had a couple older sisters, and lived a pretty ordinary life, I would say, for the most part, up until, you know, I started to realize some of the challenges that my family was facing. And it kind of started with my parents getting a divorce when I was around 5. I watched my parents struggle with their own substance use issues and mental health issues that they did not address, along with my oldest sister, especially.
All right. So as a, you know, 5, 6-year-old, how are you filtering that? Or, you know, there's not an adult to put it into context for you. You're just witnessing what they're going through without really any context or explanation.
Totally. For me, it was really difficult because I didn't understand what was going on. And I think as parents and now as an adult and parent today, I understand like why that was difficult for them. But for me, I really felt like my voice didn't matter in that situation. It was so much because I was the youngest, it was like, oh, well, Nadine, you don't understand. You're not old enough to understand. And so a lot of the conversation just kind of got brushed under the rug. And don't get me wrong, you know, they put me in therapy and I try to get some counseling and support. But for me, that isn't what I was looking for. You know, when I was at home with my parents, I just wanted to feel seen, you know, and to feel heard and to feel like I was loved and valued. And it's not that my parents didn't love me, but I knew that the things that were going on at home weren't normal. And so when I would go to school, and by the time I got a little older and started to understand some of these things, it wasn't like I was going to school and talking about it. It wasn't like a conversation that I would have with my friends or my teachers, mostly because I didn't know how. I didn't know how to talk about the things that were going on at home. And I didn't really know how because I didn't think that anybody else knew or understood what I was going through.
All right, so you get into sports and you find purpose there, right?
Yes.
But at the same time, you put expectations on yourself that maybe weren't realistic.
Oh yeah, super high expectations. I think especially as like a young teenage girl, I looked up and saw my idols and tried to find like my self-worth and image through all the wrong things. I worried about what my hair looked like, what type of clothes I was wearing, if they were name brand or not. I started wearing makeup at too young of an age. For me, it was, I thought that like maybe if I did these things, then I would be seen, you know, or then I would be feeling as if I was good enough. And that was probably what I struggled with the most, is that I didn't feel like I was good enough. And so from there, it made me make decisions and choices that I shouldn't have been.
All right, so when you look back now, what were the initial red flags? I mean, when did you start experimenting? What did it start with?
So initially, you know, like you stated before, I was in sports. Like middle school, I went to a small private Catholic middle school, 6th through 8th grade. Sports were my life. I had best friends. But yet, and I just want to make this point before I get into talking about using, because in middle school, like, I always said I would never make the choices that my sister was making, or I would never, you know, use drugs or alcohol or anything in that regard, because sports were my life. And I got really good grades, and I was on a traveling basketball team and volleyball team. I played softball every summer. Like, those things were really important to me. And so when I got into high school, it was really unfortunate that I did end up going to my first party my freshman year. And from there, things completely got out of control. But like you asked, what were the red flags? Well, there were red flags leading up to that. It was really, you know, early childhood trauma, things that I faced growing up, things that I saw that went on at home, whether it was my parents using and abusing substances, me being physically abused myself, struggling with things that I didn't know how to talk about. And so by the time I got into high school and I was in a position, you know, to go to my first party, it's not that I drank for the first time that weekend, but it was that weekend that afterwards it was as if the party never stopped, because I felt like I finally found the thing that was making me feel good enough.
Okay, and in context now with your parents' history and, you know, what your own DNA might be, you know, how quickly did it escalate from just drinking to the next thing?
So quickly. And a lot of my family members struggle with alcoholism. And for me, I was very much like, I'm never going to struggle like they are. I got this under control. And when I say is like the party never stopped, I won't go to school without getting high in the morning. Like, it was morning, noon, and night for me. But I felt like I was doing everything right because I still went to school. I still got good grades. I completely hid behind this mask and pretended like everything was fine and continued to suffer in silence.
Is there something to, like, okay, I'm only drinking or I'm only smoking marijuana, and
it just keeps
going, like, I'm not doing this
until
eventually you're doing that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, oh, well, at least I'm not doing pills, or at least I'm not smoking crack or doing heroin or, you know, some of those other heavier drugs people say. And for me, it wasn't as if there was like one drug that was the gateway for me. It was really all of it. It was me feeling as if I was accepted. It was the peer pressure from my friends. It was wanting to feel like I fit in, that I was good enough, like all these other pressures that I know every single teenager faces. For me, I didn't have the tools on how to cope with those things. So I was using substances to deal with it. And I didn't even realize it because it happened so quickly. So I was in my freshman year, by the time I was a junior, I was already using and abusing opiates or prescription pills, which from there quickly led to, you know, intravenous drug use, which led to heroin use. And it happened so fast.
It's something I hadn't thought about, but you said that you discovered heroin because it was so much cheaper to feed the habit through that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's something that people consider. You were making a practical decision about your addiction.
Yeah, literally. I was like, well, where can I get it cheaper,
right?
And that's, for me, it was, I was so messy. I was living in such a mess of my own life, my own choices, my own mistakes. And I felt that I would never be forgiven for them. And the biggest thing for me is that when I was in high school, I truly felt like nobody else knew or understood what I was going through. I thought I was the only one. Until I started speaking out about it years later, I realized that I wasn't the only one. And if only I would have spoke out, or even if somebody would have just reached out, you know, it maybe would have made a huge difference.
All right, who was Justin?
That was one of my best friends in high school.
And what happened to him?
Yeah, so shortly after I moved up to Appleton, so I was living in Beaver Dam after high school, and at that point I was at the lowest and deepest point in my addiction, and pretty heavily using. I lost my job, I lost the place that I was living, and fortunately enough for me, my older sister let me move in. And I was able to move in with her, and I started to detox. And it was about 2 weeks into that, because this is when I was deciding to make the change in my life, right? 2 weeks after I moved up to Appleton, I got a call. It was a couple days right after Christmas that one of my good friends passed from a heroin-related overdose. And it was so eye-opening for me, because I could have been that person. And
did you feel guilt?
Absolutely. I felt like I should have been. And I didn't understand why I wasn't, because there were so many times that I was close to either ending my own life or using substances to numb the pain entirely. And I didn't understand, for him, as a beautiful person, as a beautiful soul, somebody that I truly cared about, as a friend that I thought was just somebody that would always be there, you know? And for me, that was one of the first, like, hard losses I had had in my life. And don't get me wrong, there's people that had passed before then, but it was when he passed away that I started to really question, like, well, why am I still here? And it was then that I decided that I didn't want to live that way anymore, and that there was no way I could put my family through what I watched his family go through.
So you're staying at your sister's, they said you have to detox and get sober, right? Did
yeah.
you think that was going to be possible?
No. I took my sister's offer to move in with her because I thought, well, at least if I could get out of Beaver Dam, I can move up to Appleton. I can, like, just move on with my life. I'll get a place up there. I'll get a different job. And it was very quickly, especially after Justin passed away, that I knew that that wasn't the life for me anymore. And I ended up leaving the person that I was seeing at the time. I left him, and I decided to start making decisions for myself.
Was he part of that sort of toxicity, that,
oh, yeah.
that relationship? So
yeah.
getting rid of that or jettisoning that was important for
yeah,
your recovery?
Absolutely. It was so important for me to really set strong boundaries, not just with old friends, but even family members, making sure that I had strong boundaries. My sister even, like, took my car keys away from me so I couldn't drive. It was very much just, which I would never recommend for somebody to detox in their basement, by the way. This is a choice that I had to make because I didn't have insurance at the time. But for me, it worked. And I was able to get involved with the recovery community, which led me to Rise Together.
You start Rise Together. Now you've been in front of a 250,000 people.
Yeah.
Kids, you know, junior high schools, high school. You know, you come from small town America. There's a lot of parents in small town America that think this is not their problem, not their kid, not in their schools, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that a million times. And the difference today, you know, experimentation today could mean an overdose and a death first time out.
Yeah.
With fentanyl and all the things that you didn't, you know, go through during your addiction
yeah.
years, how dangerous is it out there for 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th graders?
It's so dangerous. And in fact, it's very scary. Especially, you know, for us in Rise Together, we recently got our data finished, and we're looking to get it published with Penn State College. And some of the data that we found is that students are using as young as 5th, 6th, 7th grade. And because fentanyl and carfentanil are so potent, they literally, you could take just a tiny little gram of a sugar, you know, just a little sugar, and that's like, if you were to imagine, like, that could literally kill you instantly. And if people aren't educated to know that this is happening right in our community, well, then you're losing already, because we have to be educated, we have to know what's going on, because it is impacting everyone. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, how much money you make, what kind of house you live in, what kind of car you drive, none of that matters. And I know that because I have worked all across Wisconsin, all across the nation, and with students, to know that they are facing these struggles today is because they also have some of the highest rates of stress and pressures that they're facing, and they are turning to drugs and alcohol, and that's scary.
Yeah, and parents have 10 times as many drugs to worry about.
Yes.
I mean, it's a way different story just the last couple of decades, and particularly, you know, OxyContin, Decodone, to all of the pills that have been out there, and we now know what caused this opioid, you know, horrific catastrophe we have in this country, but
yeah.
I'm still not sure we've come to grips with what it means
no.
in big and small town America. So you have the secret to being enough. What does that mean?
To me, I believe that the secret to being enough is owning who you are, right? We already are enough. And I think when we're able to have that self-awareness and to own our own worth and our own value, because we already have it and we already have our own stories. And when we use our story for good, when we can speak out and share our truth, whether it's big struggles, small struggles, no matter what it is, it matters. And it took me a really long time for me to realize that my voice mattered.
All right. Mental health, you know, is the kind of thing behind a lot of this. I mean, sure, if you have the right DNA, you might be more likely to become addicted or become an addict. But many people are using the drugs as a treatment for what the underlying mental health issue is. When was the first time you thought about suicide? At what age?
Well, real quickly, because when we talk about prescription pills, I do want to just state the fact that we are literally the most overprescribed generation, and everybody is using some sort of pill to fix a problem that they have in their life. And it's really unfortunate because we see it everywhere. They're advertised on news and media. They're like, take a pill for this or for that, right? It'll make you feel better. It'll numb this, take this away, but all these other side effects, right? I just wanted to showcase that there are other ways to finding health and wellness. And that's something for me is something that I'm really, really passionate about today as a wellness coach, for people to find alternatives and our holistic measures to find healthy ways to cope and to deal with things that they're
plenty
going on in
their life. Plenty
of studies
will show physical training and doing physical things, you know, can treat a lot of, anxiety, a lot of mental issues, just being active, you know,
totally.
Beyond being healthier, just, you know, for your weight and everything else.
Yeah.
Being active, being in nature, sunlight,
yes.
All these things.
Yeah.
Do play
drinking
a role.
Enough water.
It matters,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
So you do that as a coach. But when you're going into these schools, though, I think it's important that parents realize, if we just do the math, there are kids out there having thoughts about suicide that are not telling their parents or anyone else.
No.
Is that the way you found yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was at my lowest point, when I was 17 years old, I truly felt that this was it for me. I didn't think, especially because I made some mistakes and I made some bad choices, I let those things carry so much weight on my shoulders that I was tempting to end my own life over it. And if it weren't for some of my family members that I had and some of the tools and support that I did have in my life at the time, I certainly wouldn't be here today. But I know that thoughts of suicide and even cutting and burning and different ways of self-harm, you know, not only did it start for me by high school that I was wanting to, you know, end my own life, but even prior to that, there were things even through middle school, like by not eating enough, you know, I really started to struggle with like my own weight and how I looked. And so those were already ways that I was kind of hurting myself, you know, even up until when I started using and abusing substances. And I just kind of got to this point where I just thought that none of it mattered anymore. You know, what was there to life? And I had all these big, serious questions, and I felt like I didn't have anybody to turn to talk about it. Because at that time, like, I didn't know anybody living in recovery. I didn't know that there was another side to this, that you can get through the struggle, that you might have to walk through it, right? You can't walk around it, but I had to get through it. And once I did, I started to realize, like, the light at the end of the tunnel, because in those dark days, man, I didn't think there was any hope for me. I didn't think that there was any more to life, you know? And it wasn't until I finally started seeing and having examples in my life and people were lifting me up and encouraging me to make a difference. And that truly did make a difference.
How do families, or more importantly, maybe even kids, you know, watching or listening right now, find out about Rise Together?
Yeah, so you can head to wearerisetogether.org. You can also check us out on Facebook, on our Instagram. We are pretty much all over social media. Feel free to, you know, go on there. We have information. We are redoing our website right now, so just a heads up, but you can take the Crave 21 Challenge. You can be sure to sign up and take the No Shame Pledge with Safe Project. No Shame is really focused around having no shame and asking for help. It's very, very crucial, I think, for us to create safe spaces for young people to stand up, speak out, share their own story and to know that help is available and it's okay to ask for it, because we all struggle, right? Like, we all go through hard times, and I believe us as individuals are all living in recovery today because we're all recovering from the last 3 years alone, right? And then when you add like an epidemic on top of that, you know, and the things that we've been dealing with the opiate crisis and the addiction crisis as a whole, I mean, we know 1 in 3 families today struggle from the addiction crisis. And I know that my home was one of them, and your home could be one too. Why not ask the hard questions? Speak out. Have the uncomfortable conversations, because if we don't, who else is talking to your kids about it?
Nadine, thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.